Hello and welcome to Sartastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. Moika, this is Letitia or Letty from Finland. And I am really excited to contribute to this pre-action initiative by Olifest. And my three key takeaways are from Ricardo's talk, which is titled Building Software Reliability with Distributed Tracing. Now, a bit of a background about me and why am I interested in this topic. So I am interested in this topic because I was involved in bringing to surface the story of a team that had done this massive scale cloud infrastructure and data migration from AWS to GCP. And that was for a regional social networking service provider that had over 1.17 billion users. That's quite a lot. So you already know which country I'm talking about probably. And we relied on distributed tracing in a big way. Our tool of choice at that time was Lightstep. But I've moved out of the world of observability since December 2020. I now work in Finland. I am the founder of Arctic Howls, and this is a humble effort to follow the local stewardship efforts that are currently underway in the Arctic and subarctic regions. For today, we are primarily focused on Canada and Finland. All right, so here are my three key takeaways from Ricardo's talk that is titled Building Software Reliability with Distributed Tracing. The first is about shifting left. He talks about the need to know the real limits in order to transcend it, right? Transcend the limits. Now, the real limits, if I can pronounce my words correctly, the real limits can be gauged only in the field. It can't be done in your lab and during development. So it's really hard to know what will happen when the rubber meets the road if the road is a stranger to you. So, which is why I found it's a subtle message in his talk, but I found it very, it stood out to me and it seemed like a very subtle message about shifting left. The second one is about seeing the four golden signals, right? The signal of latency, traffic, saturation, and error. Seeing these signals in the context of a business transaction end-to-end. So it's more like letting the worldview or the lens inform your objectives, your outcomes, and metrics. And the last key takeaway is about the propagation of context across distributed and often disconnected systems. This is interesting to me because I'm studying distributed systems in nature. It's my interest in connecting distributed systems in nature and cloud-native resiliency. So that's why this topic is interesting to me about propagation of context. I might do a podcast episode on this, but I don't know that now. So there it is. These are my top three key takeaways from Ricardo's talk. I am looking forward to the event, and I hope these three key takeaways pique your interest too. So let's start with my key takeaways on Stephen Townsend's Olifest talk called Bad Observability. I am pronouncing his name the way I heard it, Stephen Townsend. I hope it's correct. And it's not Stefan or Stephen Townshend. I hope that is correct. So if I'm pronouncing it incorrectly, I'm apologizing in advance, Stephen. So Stephen Townsend, his talk is called Bad Observability. And he gave us about 15 anti-patterns in that talk. And I won't go through all the 15 anti-patterns in the world of reliability, but a few caught my attention. And maybe I'll take five, perhaps. Let's see. So the first anti-pattern that caught my attention is having entirely different tooling in your production environment and your development environment. This is a mild pet peeve of mine, not from a very like I'm not a developer, so not from a very software development lens, but just from the lens of like simulation versus reality. Like the simulator should be pretty close to the reality for you to actually be able to perform something. It's something that it's akin to rehearsal, is what I see. If you want to perform on the center stage, you might as well rehearse exactly how you would do it in on the stage, which is why I personally would prefer developers to use the exact same tools in their development environment as they would if they had to hit the production floor, because it's a little scary to have one set of tools in your dev environment and then a totally separate set of tools in your production environment. It's also a slight hint to shifting left in the sense that, instead of seeing it from inside out, like dev and then going to production, see it as this is what I would use in production. So, hey, I might as well get used to it in the development environment. So, see it from the outside in lens. And that's the first anti-pattern that we spoke about, that is different tooling in production and dev environments. The second is not understanding the wider ecosystem you operate in. Again, this is not, like I said, I'm not a coder, so this is not necessarily from that lens, but this will help you understand it from a very quality assurance and software reliability lens, a term called SIPOC. It's suppliers, input, process, output, customers. That's seeing the whole value chain in the sense that I need to know what downstream systems do I depend on and what upstream systems do I depend on for my process, for the piece of my work. Like if I'm documenting, let's take an example of like I've been a writer for many years. I'm writing a document and it, let's say, goes to the editor for checking, right? That's next in line in my whole process chain. If I knew beforehand what are the basic checks that an editor would perform, let's say the standard checks where we talk about serial comma missing, right? So if I knew those things beforehand, it would make it much more easier on the editor to later, go through and focus on things that really matter in terms of your documentation. That is the content really serving the purpose? Is the title really matching the content? Are we telling the story that we want to tell the customer? As opposed to the editors, cracking their head and saying, "Oh man, there are so many missing commas, and this person has spelling mistakes." You're getting stuff of that nature. So see it from a SIPOC lens, as in, if I'm a supplier, what are the input things that I need? What's the raw material I depend on? What are my process steps inside? What is the output that's the next step? And then who's the customer using it? So understand the whole wider ecosystem in which your even your code, for that matter, operates. Who is going to be using your code, and how is that person going to be using your code? There's also this question about as a developer, do you know how long your code takes to execute? A. And secondly, do you know how long your code needs to execute to perform the intended outcome it was designed to perform? So these are questions that you need to answer, for which you need to have that wider ecosystem visibility. And that's the anti-pattern too, that is not understanding the wider ecosystem. And I think it's already been too long with two patterns. Maybe I will just talk about a couple more then. The next one is a big dumb metric. I'm quite sure people must have heard this, right? When we talk about what's the total response time? What's the latency like? One particular thing that you focus on and say, hey, 98 or 99% reliability. But based on what? What were the subcomponents that actually led to that reliability figure that you're looking at? I know executives like to look at one big number there, but as a developer or as a person in operations, you need to be able to know the subcomponents. So this anti-pattern that he talks about is interesting in that sense. So instead of having one big esoteric metric which doesn't tell you the whole story, you need to know the subcomponents that actually lead you to that. One example that he gave was about do not log CPU usage. Also consider things like memory, disk, and network. Like you also need to know, yes, okay, the CPU usage is up to this level, but what processes are actually hogging your CPU? So maybe an executive cares only about I'm just saying at an executive level, you probably care about just that one figure. But as at an operational level, and even at a development level, to know how to build your processes so they don't hog your CPU. Now, this is Letty talking without knowing much because she's not a developer. But I'm sure if any developer is listening to me, they would know what I'm talking about. Instrumenting your code in a way that it executes and performs in a way that you want the desired output. That is, your code should not hog your CPU. So if your end result is your CPU not being hogged, then you need to know what processes will actually hog your CPU, for which you need to know how to design your services to become those CPU-loving processes. That's the third anti-pattern. That's a big, dumb metric, but you need to break it down to subcomponents. And the last one I would go with is alerts fatigue. And this is coming from my experience working in security, like SOC automation, basically. Like how we have network operation centers, we have security operation centers. And in 2019, I wasn't even born there then. In 2019, I was working for this company called Cyberspons, and they were into security operations and automation and response, something called a SOAR. The company is now part of Fortinet, so we have Fortinet SOAR, which is like complete SOC automation. And alerts fatigue was something that was very critical to us, not necessarily just getting notified about every damn shitty thing. So don't keep paging me over false alarms, over trivial matters, right? So alert fatigue is important. So knowing what you need to be notified on is also an important observability pattern. So how do you see it is, there are tons of metrics, right? How do you know which metrics matter? Like as a technical person, you might be focused on your technical metrics, but they don't move the needle for the customer. So in that case, you want to kind of again, have that outside in view, the same SIPOC story that I told. And this is why I picked these four anti-patterns, because they kind of linked in a way for me. And they bring out that same story of understanding the entire ecosystem and the entire value chain, right from customers, right outside from customers to your vendors. That is your entire customer output process, input or raw material, and vendors or suppliers. And alert fatigues is knowing what moves the needle for the customer first. What are the metrics that matter to the customer? Based on what the customer tells you or what you observe in conversation with the customer, you will figure out what internal metrics you need to gauge to figure out what moves the needle for the customer. So there are two sets of metrics, and those are your critical metrics, not necessarily all your technical metrics. So very zoomed in focus on a certain metrics. There was also another last anti-pattern about multiple dashboards, but I think I do not want to give more than 10 minutes to a talk. So that's why I think I'm already kind of close to 10 minutes. So let me wrap up with these key takeaways that I had, right? Entirely different tooling for production and dev environments. That's the first anti-pattern. The second is not understanding your wider ecosystem. That is not being sensitive to downstream and upstream systems and how your processes and how your code impacts that. The third is a big damn metric. You focus on just one, but not know the subcomponents that make up that. The whole story about hogging your CPU, the processes are also important. As important as, maybe more important than your CPU, just your CPU utilization. And finally, the last one is about alert fatigues. That's about it for bad observability. Let's now look at another talk. The next talk is by Christopher Evans, and it's titled Observability is not just for your systems, it's for your team and incidents as well. In this talk, he talks about better ways to observe not just your system, but your organization. And he uses the lens of incidents to do so. I found this talk pretty interesting because he took us back to his time when he was working at Monzo and an incident that occurred in July 2019 that took down the bank for several hours. And I also just realized that 2019 seems to be a running theme of this episode because I just spoke about something in 2019 as well in the last segment of this episode. So what happened here is some incident took down this bank, and it was there was an outage for several hours. Reminds me of the recent outage at Atlassian that went down when we didn't have Jira and Confluence sometime in April. But this is a bank, so like, what's worse, you ask? The not having access to your money when you need it is not knowing if your money is actually gone because the bank you trusted suddenly disappeared. I mean, I would take Atlassian's outage anytime over Monzo's outage. So that was a scary incident to hear about. But he mentioned that, and I think both the incidents had a similar root cause. I wouldn't call it root cause. It had a similar problem, and it wasn't a technical problem, but a communication problem. Which is why I think these two incidents, right? In all these incidents we talk about, I think the Slack incident sometime that happened, and then Slack had this entire debriefing incident note out. All these incidents, right? Send a very powerful message about why somebody on this planet should be caring about observing systems. And in Chris's talk, he's also talking about observing organizations and using the lens of incidents. So that was one thing. The entire incident was a very good key takeaway for me. Another thing was like, I think he kept taking me back a couple of years. Like, he had the slide on where he spoke about safety one versus safety two. And that took me back to my quality assurance days when I used to worry about type one and type two errors. In very plain terms, type one error happens when you reject a good item as bad. Like a batch of apples is rejected, but actually some apples were good in that. But just the batch happens to be rejected as a bad batch, although the items were good. And type two is when you accept a bad item as a good one. That is, you send out a whole batch of apples with worms in them, and it passes your quality check. That's like a PR nightmare. You remember all the recalls that happened. So that slide of his where he talks about safety one and safety two, although the context is slightly different because in his slide, the context is safety one is having as few things as possible go wrong in your life. Like, don't fix things until it's broken, right? And safety two is having as many things as possible go right for you. That's a message about keeping, keep on improving to maximize your chance of success. Kind of related, but not directly related to my type one and type two errors. So that was a good. It was, I think, it just reminded me of something that I knew back then, back in 2016, 2017. Anyways, moving on. So he did. This whole reference, right, of safety too, wherein you need to have as many things as possible go right, which is you optimize to increase your chance of success. And the question is like, do you continue to observe things when things are going just fine? I would say yes, because you never know when you slip into chaos. And this part where he was discussing about, when you slip into chaos, he didn't necessarily say the exact terms. I was reminded of David Snowden. I believe many people must have heard of David Snowden. He's the founder of Cognitive Edge. I think it's now called the Kinnevin Company. But he had developed this Kinnevin framework many, many years ago. And that was to make sense of, to kind of grok uncertainty, to understand your constraints, your operating environment, and what kind of constraints exist in those environments. But Letty should not be the person you should be listening to when it comes to Kinnevin, because I just briefly read a couple of his papers. I don't know much about Kinnevin. What you can do is follow his website, the Kinnevin Company, his company, to get your daily dose of uncertainty. And let us move back to this talk by Christopher Evans. He then goes on to, talk about why incidents are a great way to observe systems. And what he calls an incident, in a very plain term, is that anything that's unexpected or an unplanned interruption that immediately requires attention. That's an incident in his view. And the good thing was a reference about honeycomb here. He said, unfortunately for organizations, as far as organizations are concerned, we don't have honeycomb yet, although we have it for systems, right? And there was a good reference because it brought a smile to my face because Charity Majors and Liz are my absolute favorite. And by the way, I think their book is almost out. It's called Observability Engineering: Achieving Production Excellence. I think there was a LinkedIn post that went out just yesterday or day before yesterday, I can't remember, by Liz. So that book is something I'm looking forward to buy to read, because obviously Charity Majors had a huge influence on me way back in 2019 again, when I started reading about observability. I had this student, a PhD student, who was doing some research on distributed consensus and Paxos and stuff of that nature. No, I'm not a developer. I'm not a computer science student. So academic writing is one of my skill sets, and I happen to meet a lot of PhD and master students who struggle with literature review, and I'm digressing. But that's how I came into contact with this whole world of observability way back in 2017 to begin with, and then dabbled and then didn't dabble, and then I don't know what I did. And that's how I got introduced to Charity Majors in 2019, after a lot of dabbling and dancing around with this student and studying about distributed consensus and stuff of that nature. Not that I have any clue, but it was nice to listen to Chris talk about Honeycomb. So that has been quite an inspiration for me. Anyway, so in the meantime, if you have nothing better to do, you could read my crappy blog while you wait for Charity Majors' book called Observability Engineering. And I will put the link in the show notes, maybe. And before I digress, by the way, I am the self-proclaimed queen of tangents. So that title goes to nobody else. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, go listen to episode number 4 of my podcast. It is not this podcast, it's a second podcast that I have that's focused on Earth stewardship, and it's called Arctic Howls. But let's circle back to this particular Olifest talk, and let's move to the next key topic. I think this might surprise you, but it wasn't such a big surprise for me, because Stephen just said something about an anti-pattern, right? This big dumb metric that doesn't really tell you anything significant. Christopher said the same thing. He said this mean time to recovery is really not an answer. It's a low quality, unreliable metric. And I'm kind of inclined to believe him now, because I've been studying distributed systems in nature, and all these super touted, single super giant metric, they kind of scare me now. So when he said this MTTR is just like a low quality metric, I was like, yeah, maybe, most likely. And then Steven said, echoed the same thing, right? He said it's a big dumb metric, but it doesn't tell you anything. So that was a nice note in the talk. And he also backed it up. He shared a paper that critically evaluates MTTR, and he spoke about Monte Carlo simulation. I'm getting a feeling I need to read about this, because every time I keep reading something, the Monte Carlo simulation keeps popping up. So I need to start figuring out what exactly is that damn thing. Anyways, but after mildly bashing MTTR, he was super kind to show us, where do we go if you're not looking at MTTR? What else can you look at? And by the way, another digressing point, plus points to Christopher for having a nice, soothing voice. I'm a podcaster, so how your voice sounds really matters to me. And Christopher had a very nice, soothing sound, so I hope my voice doesn't sound too bad. So let me know if it does. But that was like a digress, a point. To digress, but plus points for Chris on that. All right, moving back. I keep digressing. And you might have missed all the key takeaways, but I'll kind of sum it up later. The next thing that he spoke about, he kind of advocated for structured data, because to even have, even to go looking at where's your time spent and what are the key people you need to, converse with, who are the key people, where are the weak links. To do any of that, you need some sort of a structured data. And that's probably what you need to start interrogating, even asking that question, like, guys, where is our time being spent? You need to have some structured data for that. And interestingly, Charity Majors also, sometime in 2019, spoke about arbitrarily wide structured data blobs at the origin. This was to bash that entire observability pillars, right? Like the three pillars of observability that people used to talk about. And she was bashing that with this arbitrarily wide structured data blobs. But that was like way back in 2019, so I have to read her new book now to know how far we've come, from where we were at in 2019. So that was interesting for me. And also this point where he spoke about, right, knowing your single points of success. Who are the people who keep popping in when incidents happen? And who are your central hubs of knowledge? But also how you can propagate across the organization for organizational learning, which is why he speaks about knowing your team dependencies. And again, it relates to what, it echoes what Stephen spoke about, anti-patterns, right? Not understanding your whole ecosystem, which is the same SIPOC reference, not knowing your upstream and downstream levers and fracture points, which is the same thing that Christopher's talking about, knowing your team dependencies and your failure points as well as the success points. One very, very interesting thing that I saw was they did some recent, obviously he's the founder of Incidents.io, and this is a Slack native way to respond better. So they had this entire, they had a customer and they gathered some awesome chat data from over a year of observing how teams interacted specifically through Slack. So it's Slack native response to incidents. And in that image that he showed up on in the talk, each node was a key person involved in a particular incident. And this is based on the chat data that he gathered. And then the color was representing the teams that are involved in the incident. And the thickness of lines between the nodes indicated the density of communication. Like, so that image stayed with me because I think it was very nice to see. One is to see the relation. It's more like a cloud, a point cloud. But I think for me, what was more interesting is because, again, coming back to David Snowden, when he spoke about, when Christopher said that, you know, you need to see your critical nodes, that is the people, the key people, and you need to see where is your decision making the slowest, it immediately took me back to what David Snowden talks about in terms of micro narratives and weak signal detection. I'm getting a feeling now when I'm having listened to Stephen, having listened to Christopher, Michael Hausenblas, who else did I listen to? Ricardo, Piyush Varma. After listening to all these people, this is constant. There's a common denominator in the sense that of operating constraints, knowing the environment you operate in and what are the constraints that are most relevant to that environment. This whole thing that David Snowden works on, this Kinevan framework, could actually be very useful in the world of observability. So I think our community can spend some time and learn a ton from David's work. Probably most of these guys are already familiar with his work. And if that's the case, I think we need to hear those case studies about how Kinevan, the Kinevan framework, has been helping the world of observability. Because I keep seeing that that link, and I want to see it more often now. All right, so like I said, there was a bunch of stuff to unpack. It was a very, very, very interesting talk. More so, his voice was really nice, very soothing, so very interesting to listen to him. And this talk, I was really happy because he spoke about MTTR, he spoke about, observing your organization through incidents, then the whole Monzo incident, and how to, create a service catalog to understand all the things that are operating, as well as to stress test your service catalog to see when it really works. And finally, to wrap up, there were just two things I wanted to, it's a long-winded highlight. It's almost, I think, 14 minutes now on Christopher's talk. I really enjoyed it. A common theme was, like I said, this whole thing, know your ecosystem, same things that Stephen echoed. Know your ecosystem, one dumb big metric, alert fatigue again came up, and it seems to be like a common theme in the world of reliability. Because to be honest, somebody's always working behind the scenes to make the actors on the stage look super awesome. I think it's about time now, as a community, we do a better job at addressing this alerts fatigue and burnout, because somebody needs to really look behind the scenes and also make sure that people working behind the scenes are acknowledged, which is why I really like this whole field of observability. And Chris's talk especially, not just about observing systems, but observing the organization, which is essentially people, right? Business is all about people. So I think that's a very nice message of stewardship also in from my lens, which I think was very nice. And to wrap up this entire talk and mine, I don't think these are key takeaways. They're like, I completely had a complete I don't know, it was like a running commentary on Christopher Evans' talk, like a full talk of 27 minutes. I think it was really, really nice for me, and I'm already at the 15-minute mark here. I might not do another talk because I think I've already added Ricardo's talk, which is like 3 minutes, which was my pre-reaction video actually when I first started. I submitted my first Audifest pre-reaction video, and then I had a 10-minute talk on Steven's talk, and then again, now this is almost 15, 20 minutes. I might just do one more, or I might not. Let's see, because I don't want the talk to be too long. But I did want to wrap up. This entire talk by Christopher took me back a few months ago. Like just a couple of months ago, I was a Flood product owner. Flood response was part of my job. But flood response was not my main job. Like I'm the product owner, right? But for me, the biggest thing is since observability was something that was something that stayed with me since 2017, this whole thing about behind the scenes, understanding the canvas. And the instrumentation. That's why responding to flood events was not so important to me, but I was more curious about the instrumentation that could come about by studying all these incidents. The event of a flood is obviously a harrowing thing because it's a natural catastrophe, right? But from an incidence lens, which is what it resonated with me, like Christopher's talk resonated with me because I went immediately back to my role as a Flood product owner. And my interest was so much in understanding the incident from an instrumentation perspective on what can we do to observe this event? What can we do to help the people who are responding to the flood? What can be done? I was lucky that I was. I still am, but I might be. I'm quitting my job. So, but I was lucky to have 18 months working with this company that deals with satellite imagery, SAR data. And this podcast, Sartastic Beast, is inspired by all these people I worked with for the last 18 months, which is why I think this podcast is dedicated to Sartastic Beast. But it will talk heavily about cloud native resiliency and observability, which is where my heart is, understanding distributed systems in nature, and also understanding this earth observation piece, which is why I was talking about this talk being important, because I'm literally trying to blend the world of Earth observation with the world of cloud native resiliency and the world of observability. I'm trying to bring these two, three worlds together. Like, yes, cloud native infrastructure is already there in the world of Earth observation in a big way because you already have all these big giants, AWS and GCP and Microsoft Azure. Cloud native infrastructure is already there and it's kind of coming well. And you have this Open Geospatial Consortium. So you have all of this going, but what is still missing is observability. And I think the Earth observation community can benefit in a big way if the observability world comes a little closer to Earth observation. So we can have this impact in a more, have this climate action. Because at the end of the day, yes, we're studying systems and Monzo, the bank that Christopher spoke about, having the bank suddenly disappear is something that would scare the hell out of you, right? It's the same thing you feel when you have water right up your doorstep, when you have an ice jam. Like last year, we had a flood in British Columbia, a flood event in British Columbia. We had a wildfire event in British Columbia. Lytton went up in flames. So NatCat is important to me, and Earth observation is important to me, and I'm hoping in a way through this podcast specifically, and my other podcast, Arctic Howls, I can bring that world closer, bring the observability specialist, bring the reliability specialist closer to the world of Earth observation, and bring the cloud native resiliency, cloud native infrastructure, blend all these people together, and bring us more towards Earth stewardship. I'm quite sure now that I will not do another Olifest talk, and I think I will wrap up with this. But I think I really wanted to say thank you to Christopher Evans because his talk gave me an opportunity to talk about the real motivation behind doing these two separate podcasts. I really do want to come to a world where observability experts, cloud native infrastructure experts, and earth observation experts, specifically SAR, because that's where my experience has been. All these people come together and we kind of through our tiny contributions, through our many, many, many tiny contributions, our microservices, our micro contributions, micro narratives, evoke this earth stewardship in a bigger way and take that climate action to the next level. I will leave you with that and say thank you to all these three people I five actually, right? The five talks I heard. I also did listen to Piyush Verma's talk on Open Metrics Exporter, but I think that's a little too technical for me to give my key takeaways. I am hoping that somebody listens to my podcast and actually does a pre-reaction video on the Open Metrics Exporter, because that is a very nice technical talk. It was very engaging for me from a very technical lens, but I am not that technically sound to give you a solid pre-reaction on that. But I would highly recommend that talk to somebody and hope that somebody can give a pre-reaction on that talk. Apart from that, I'm very happy about Ricardo's talk, Michael Hausenblaus's talk about the ROI. Very important. Your money talks are very important. And you know, the business impact is very important. And Stephen's talk on bad observability, the 15 anti-patterns that we spoke about. I think I spoke about four. And finally, to wrap up, Christopher Evans' talk, which is absolutely smashing because it kind of took me to where I wanted to. And this whole thing culminated and brought me, you know, full circle to the whole concept of Earth stewardship and why these two podcasts exist. Thank you for listening to me. And I think that's a wrap. And I will look forward to seeing you guys at OliFest tomorrow. It's on the 9th of May, 9th to the 12th of May. It's about 4 hours, I think, in the evening. So for people in Finland, I am in Finland right now in Kuopio at 62.89 degrees north. Yes, it's the 60th parallel. Not exactly the Arctic Circle, but in the Arctic region. But yeah, so for people in Finland, it will be the event is in the evening. If you would like to join it, please welcome. Everybody is welcome to join us at OliFest tomorrow and for the next 4 days in the next week. All right then, those are my key takeaways. I hope you enjoy this. Take care. This is Letitia, saying as the Finns say, moi moi. Thank you for listening to this episode of Sartastic Beast and Where to Find Them. The intro and outro music is by Yaakov Goldman, courtesy of Free Music Archive.